Hey everyone, today's episode is one of my favorite masterminds that took place way back in 2018. I call it Efficiently Using Your Time. It's packed with great Q&A and I wanted to share with everyone, especially during this time of efficiency and the necessity thereof. We're going to talk about productivity and accessibility. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook.
I have a do it now philosophy. If you can do it now, do it. If you can, you're going to save yourself at least twice as much time in your life. The minute you don't do something now, it takes you minimum twice as much time. And statistically, it depreciates in a statistical success because the chances of you forgetting to do it are exponential. So my whole system of calendaring is how productive and accessible am I within the 24 hours of activity that I have, including taking sleep as an activity, which is why you can have limited sleep like me. It's an activity. It's an activity, it's a subconscious and unconscious activity that can actually assist me in being productive and accessible. There's no work for me, there's just activity I get paid for and activity I don't get paid for. The activities that I have that all of a sudden I don't like that are at the wrong station, I change the channel, right? Or I understand and pray for the happiness, or I get away. Like there's all these strategies once I divide out the fact that we all have 24 hours of time. The only way that I can beat you is math. Productivity and accessibility. If I can be more productive and accessible with my time, I can beat you with math. Happiness on the other side, if I can maximize the time that I'm inspired, so if I sleep inspired, right? If you wake up tired, shame on you. You got to figure out sleep. You should wake up inspired. You got to. Like all it is how inspired. Inspiration, it bends time. If I'm inspiring in a speech, everyone's like, holy shit. It's almost 2 o'clock. If I'm not inspiring, you're like, holy shit, is he almost done? I'm hoping the first one's true here, but I've been in crowds where maybe it's the other one. It's like, this is the longest speech of my life. Try to speak to millennials sometimes with their phones. And who's at public speaks or speaks at schools? Is it this? I just have to share this because this amazes me. You guys, I can read, right? You light up. Happy, I'm moving. But like I get in front of even graduate schools and I'm speaking for like an hour and they're not necessarily all looking at their phones. And I'm literally like an island up there thinking, is anybody listening to me? I'm like, am I touching them? Like, this is the same shit that works with everyone. How am I not touching? And then I finish and there's kind of like an odd applause. And then they line up for hours. Right, I'll ask for a question, no one asks, raises their hand. Then I finish, and they line up for hours. That was the best speech of my life. I'm going to say thank you. I'm like, what? Where's that disconnect? With you guys are easy, right? I'm just curious if anyone else speaks to those ages. Is that?
I'm 27, I'm a millennial. We listen.
You're listening. We listen. But not reacting.
No, we multitask, because that's what we do.
Oh, okay.
So we're looking at our phone, but our eyes are on our phone, but our ears are on.
Yeah, you're listening. That's incredible. That was my question for you. Anyone else have another question? Any of the guys that came? Yeah, please.
So you talked about the idea where you say you have 3 mentors at any given time.
At least. Minimum.
Do you find when you attract those mentors into your life, is it through intention or is it one of these emotional kind of moments where you're like, I got to get to know that person?
Both. And I think you bring up a really good point. I use this as an analogy. My wife had her iPad out on Facebook and we were mentioning something about pigs or whatever. We have kids. And like within 40 minutes, that pig with the marker ad came up. And that's AI, right? Like Facebook has, they're listening and watching and they're pulling up. Well, I believe the field of intention is a database. So everything that you can think of exists. The minute you think of it, that's telling you that there's a database with that data in it. And there's an AI that's far more superior than Facebook has that allows us to draw it down and to materialize it. Yeah, and so when I meet someone, but the bigger question I think that we want to know is, what do I look for in a mentor, whether they appear or whether I strategically look them out? Because I do. I strategically sought out Mr. Nguyen because I wanted to change my relationship to money, and I loved his relationship to money. So my mentorships may not last as long, but you know, I went to Napoleon Hill Foundation to write my first book because I love Think and Grow Rich. I sought them out. Warren Moon, I manifested him, and I learned the majesty of calmness, because I used to waste so much energy. Not just, I wasn't a big dip down guy, even through bankruptcy. I was never a big dip down. My problem was the opposite. Wow. And I never had the wisdom. Warren would always say, hey, not a big deal. You know, I threw 556 yards against Kansas City on the number one defense and went to the AFC playoffs and won that game, and all I did was this, right? You're wasting energy. All that energy, it may seem good, but you're just causing yourself to have a drop. So I literally am very specific on mentorship, and they come from all ages. And that way I have, that, you know, Justin's a big mentor of mine because he's media-wise, and he has taught me, you know, I know you're looking for an editor. We're constantly looking for an editor. I finally, you know, I had some huge days with my content the other day because we found a wonderful combination of how I can scale Justin by editing and then handing it off to Justin to give it the energy. And so he's truly has to hold my frequency when you're editing. That's why editing's a problem, because it's a frequency. And so if, how do you capture what I just did in a 30-second clip? Like, what are you going to choose? Well, if you don't know my frequency, you're going to be stuck going, and then, yeah. And that's why guys can edit. Everybody knows Premiere. There's, get a kid from college. But, you know, and then there's that cool thing about it, too, that you'll learn is I have different editors. He has to do the frequency, but there's a certain vibration that you're going to hit. So I try to range my vibration so that some people that aren't going to be aware of some of the more complex things that I talk about will still be motivated. And if you've ever seen the speaker that you're like, why are people so excited about this? It's just because you have a higher vibration and they're talking to a lower vibration. And that's what I find in the mentorship is, okay, who's going to help me? You know, in fact, all of you, as you're going, I'm thinking in my head, okay, CBD, we have the kid stuff, right? CBRE, I'm thinking in my head, okay, where's this mentorship or relationship? And that also helps with time, because I'm very specific about why I'm going to do a phone call or a meeting. And I make people stand to it. I'll let them, they'll call me and say, okay, my timer's on. I know I only have 5 minutes. Cool. What do you got? How can I be of service? And that's an easy way to keep things short. The irony is, Michael know this because he's on, you know, my calls. I still get like the schmoozing in. Like, you wouldn't believe you would be able to do it in a 5 minute call. But, you know, that clock's right there. And I'm just like, all right, we got done in a minute. What you really want to get, let's talk about the kids for four. You know, I tell it, it's amazing. You're just doing more of them. And then you're accessing more information. Think about 5 minute phone calls. I can do 12 phone calls in an hour. And then you get more motivated because you mix them up, right? I do sections of 3 5-minute overview calls. Then I'll take a 20 minute meeting, right? Your day's varying. All these tricks of inspiration. You know, I can't just go through calls all day at 5 minutes a piece. Great questions. Anybody else?
If you could go back in time and give your 25-year-old self advice about life or business, what would you say?
Same advice I give myself today. That's how hard this is. And I put, gratitude's very important to me. And I'll tell everyone, you want to change your life, say thank you before you go to bed and when you wake up. Get it into your neural pathways, into your subconscious. If you have a grateful, everything is I get to. Gratitude, I'm around the biggest thought leaders in the world in power. But I don't keep thank you anymore by my bed, in my wallet, hidden in places. I keep two words, radical humility. Humility is so important because it allows us to ask for help, right? It allows us to be one. It allows us to illuminate who we are. It's all humility. Allows us, it's the closest cure to egoectomy that I want. If I could stay in a humble state, I could never be agitated or have grievances or attacking thoughts of anyone, to live in humility. And so I could have saved myself, because I have an unconscious competency to make money. I don't think there was any great skills or knowledge, to be really honest, of how I became a millionaire 9 months out of law school. I think it was a matter of, you know, I had some skills to sell, but I just outworked people and got into this attraction of money. You know, it was what I was all about. And you see,
were you introduced to Napoleon Hill back then, or when were you introduced to?
to the foundation. So Greg Reed, he had passed, right? Yeah. So I didn't go to Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
So Think and Grow Rich, from the sales, my first sales job, selling those educational systems, that scam. They gave me Think and Grow Rich, and so, you know, the guy was one of those cheesy, like, boiler room guys that, and he's got to read this book, you know. And here's the cool thing about reading books like that. I still read it. Just like I wrote my book that way, and people who have read my book will tell you they've read it 5-6 times. I read A Course in Miracles now the same way. And I read it and something new is there. Right? That's what Think and Grow Rich. It's extraordinary. It's pragmatic and spiritual. When I was the first time around, I would give those books to everyone before I wrote my own. And I would tell people, read this and you'll make your first $1 million. That's how confident. I always said that every time I read it, it seems like I make another million. There's so many great things. And I wanted to write a book like that. It took them 15 minutes to teach me how to write a book like the one that I wrote. That was a bestseller, my first book. It took me a lot longer to write it. And I started realizing, man, why do I got to do it myself? I don't know shit about CBD. I got my new man. I'm going to call him. And all of a sudden I became, and I don't like the word connector, because I believe we're already all connecting. So I'm a manifestor, right? I'm an attractor, right? And remember, the law of attraction doesn't work without action. And the law of attraction also doesn't work without the law of Goya. Anybody know what the law of Goya is besides me? Yeah. Law of Goya, John Assaroff coined, and you guys I know are going to appreciate it. It's get off your ass, right? Don't sit at home high on your mom's couch dreaming about shit. Do it. And that's a big conflict. Like, how can I be like super active but also allow things to happen? Aha! That's, to me, that's the secret. No one's probably more productive than you and I, but we allow things to happen, right? We're detached from it. We're just putting out energy. The more energy you put out unconditionally creates a void, and then allow the universe to fill your void. That's why things come through you. When I went bankrupt, the reason is everything happened for me, right? So I had millions of dollars, cars, houses, planes. But I was overflowed. There's only so much of me. It was all for me. Once I said, it's coming through me, well, then the universe keeps allowing me to expand. Just keeps, right? It's coming through me. I appreciate it. And then it's going to other people. I'm adding value for other people. Big difference. You always have enough. Great questions. Anyone else? Yeah.
How do you find your laser focus on your purpose in life?
I don't have one. Let me explain. He asked, how do I find a laser focus on my life? I believe in not limiting my point of entry. So I'm almost the exact opposite. It's when, here's how laser focus is defined by me. I think about what I want, and that makes it a mathematical advantage of a possibility. Think about it. When you don't know, and try this out the next week as homework. Ask as many people, just ask them, hey, what is it that you want? And watch them go, it's your fucking life, dude. You don't even know one thing. Like, you can't tell me what you want. And I started realizing I made all that money. I really didn't know what I wanted. So the what takes nothingness into a possibility, a mathematical advantage. Just knowing what. Then I pass it through values that change every day. Personal values, experiential values, giving values, and receiving values. Knowing that my financial values are the least important because it's a renewable resource. But my health, my integrity, experiences can never be taken away. What my legacy of giving away can never be taken away. Once I put the what I want through the value test, I then get clarity on exactly what it is. I balance it with the values of the day. And notice I say the day. Too many young people, I know you're a millennial, they think they gotta have 25%, bullshit. Let when you die, your life be balanced. Some years you need 90% about receiving. Some years it'll be 90% about experiences. Some years it might be 90% hopefully about giving. That's okay. But you balance your values, clarity, balance. Now it allows you with those values to be focused on what you want, to pay attention to it. The mathematical conclusion about attention is the more we put attention on something, the more we draw from the power of intention, the database. That's why I'm a student of my calendar. Because my time, the activity I do in 24 hours is so important, I need to pay attention to it. And you, these guys are forced to do it. It changed my life studying my calendar. And I'm still not very good at it. I know that's one thing, but my day changes every time I pay attention to my calendar. I notice something that would make me more productive and accessible. Not just what I'm doing, but the white space in my calendar. So attention, that gives confidence. Confidence opens up the door for manifestation, which then takes your possibility. When you're confident, you're inspired. That's why if you're confident in sports, statistically, you actually can be 50% more productive. When someone says they're going up to bat and they pulled them and say, oh yeah, I'm feeling it, or a drive in golf, 50% when someone feels that way when they interview them. How you feel about this? Oh, I'm not so sure. Uh-oh. But when they're confident and they're just like, on, you know, coach, put me in. Like, you know, I coach little kids and I'm looking for the kid that's like, put me in. Because that's confidence. 50% more chance they're going to be successful. Well, here's the cool thing about inspiration. Not only can you go from nothingness to a possibility just by knowing what you want, but if you can be inspired, it's a probability. A possibility turns into a probability, a mathematical advantage just by being confident. In this case, 50% in sports. Now, remember, I always use this caveat. My only rule about statistics is, and I know this one to be true, 99% of all statistics are made up. So take my statistics with a grain of salt. But don't take my possibility to probability, because that's my life. I want mathematical advantages. I live probabilities. And then I know the egoectomy, when you say focus, what's the difference between my probability and my perspective? My perspective is my reality. Your perspective is your reality. That's why I don't care what I do, I don't care how much I have, and I definitely don't care what all of you think. I care what I think. That's my truth. And I care what I think about you. That's it. Everyone feels that way. Three hardest things to do in life: not care about what you do, not care about how much you have, and especially what other people think of you. But if you can do that, and you use discipline, consistency, right? I believe the definition of happiness is the enjoyment of the consistent everyday, persistent without quit, pursuit of your truth, potential. If you can do that consistently, it goes from your conscious to your subconscious to your unconscious. You have a competency that's Then you use strategy, two simple strategies. One, live your life of service, provide value. That doesn't mean give away everything. That means provide value. Simply pick up trash when you see it, open up doors when you see it, but also produce shit. That's value. Be productive. Then finally, awareness, which comes from asking and paying attention, right? Learn this question before you leave. Do you know anyone that can help me? That's why I like these group, right? You basically say, hey, do you know anyone that can help me? I'm a realtor, I'm a construction guy, I'm an energy person, I'm a lawyer. Do you know anyone that can help me? And then you're giving someone an opportunity to be of service and be productive. And we're not connecting, right? We're just cleaning the connection between us. We're all one. That's why I don't like anything that separates us. But here's the cool thing. Possibility with what, probability with why. Using discipline, strategy, and awareness, our why turns into how. And that's how I think I transitioned from doctor, lawyer, failure, money-driven, into, you know, for me, a fulfilled, purposeful, majority of the time, super-duper inspired person who has everything I desire the right way. I remember lying in bed, completely looking at the ceiling, Rancho Santa Fe home. My dream was true. Gorgeous wife, who I was in love with as a little kid and hated me, to three beautiful daughters, looking at the ceiling going, fuck, I just didn't feel good. To now, and having everything I ever dreamed of, now I have everything I ever dreamed of, and I wake up every morning hurrying to what I'm doing, and then most importantly, like tonight, I will be in a hurry to get home. That's how much I love my life. No regrets, just hurrying here, loving this, but I no doubt, 8:45, I will be hurrying and hoping that plane somehow teletransports me home.
Now, me personally, I'm coming from kind of a haphazard type thing, like you said. I never went bankrupt. I don't think I made enough money to ever go bankrupt. But did the whole usual kid from a small block, rough neighborhood, basketball, chasing the basketball dream. Ended up not getting a scholarship. Graduated from Penn State, degree in pre-law. And now I'm working for Larry Krasner, district attorney's office. And I'm debating, thinking about going back to law school, but at the same time, I don't really want to play with the loan situation, and a part of me still wants to do something as far as creating content, creating something that's actually good within the media, because I feel like a lot of it is garbage and really bad for the brain. So I guess my question is asking, where did you get okay with shifting gears so many times? Because for me, it's like, I'm really working on just ignoring everything. Like, I don't care what how my mom feel about my life decisions,
good.
My dad, my block, good. My college friends. I just don't care anymore, because I'm literally in college debt because this choice was made to make my family proud.
Right. See, here, that's what most people have in their life, right? He's manifesting what other people wanted for himself, and he's feeling resentful for the people that care the most about him. He said his family, his friends. And I'm not going to ask for hands, but I know exactly how that feels. $100,000 in debt, graduating law school, going, what the heck am I doing? I don't want to be a lawyer. I literally started finding my own frequency. And here's the handful of sand analogy. All those people that love you, and they do, man, they care a lot about you, and you got to draw from that inspiration. It's like a handful of sand. My mom, I'm 51 years old. My mom still gives me advice, and I still have to go back to center. But I literally take a handful of sand, and I listen. You know, oh, you shouldn't travel so much. You know, you need to play golf more, or whatever advice. And I'm like, handful of sand. And then every once in a while, someone tells me something. Be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self. Do good deeds. Be kind, not right. Be of service. Provide value. Put profitability first. When you make a decision, we live on this earth, so do an economic analysis of it. So I don't think I think law school is a tremendous thing. I'm not sure I'd go that far into debt. I was so scared of my debt, and you may resonate with this. I graduated $100,000 in debt, and I remember when I was applying to those jobs saying to God, God, if you can give me a job to pay back my law loans and buy my mom a house, I will shovel shit with my hands for 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, and be grateful. That's all I wanted. If you could let me pay back my law, all that education, everything that it was so desperate because I wanted to please my mom and everyone, you know, the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school. I have Ivy League, Harvard, Penn, Columbia. I'm living up to all things I shouldn't be living up to. And I'm sitting there in bed thinking to myself, I've done all of this so I can pray to God for the ability to shovel shit for 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, so I could pay back my loans. I'm not making that decision. And so what I'm doing now is saying to myself, how can I get a law degree if that's what I want? If I want a law degree, not because other people tell me, but because I learned how to communicate, I think there's future opportunity to make money, and there's relationships that I'm going to make with people because I'm going to get in a good law school, because I'm not going to half-ass it. I'm not just going to go to, you know, Western State University that's discredited in 3 years, right? I'm going to a top law school specifically for this. This is the way that I would do it, and here's my economics. I'm going to find the freaking money if that's what I want to do, and if not, I'm going to find something else that is more economically sound. Because profit first. I always will put purpose into what I'm doing. I find purpose in taking out the trash. I hated taking out the trash. I found purpose in it by saying to myself, this will give me time to think about what I want. I move so fast, I gotta slow down. So when I see trash, I grab it. Instead of creating resistance and spilling on me and cutting me, right? I actually change the energy by putting purpose into something basic. So I would say to you, you got a lot of choices. One is going to law school. First, make the decision why you want to go to law school. Then put an economic plan together of how you're going to pay for it. I met great story to this measure. Josh York, guy's like a 256 franchises, fastest growing franchisee, gym guys, and it's international now. But I love the way that he decided to start his idea. He needed 15 grand. So he already knew what he needed. He created a plan of he's going to start this online gym, and it was going to cost him 15 grand. Unlike most people, right, he decides, okay, I'm going to go work for the 15 grand, and I'm going to literally save 90-some percent of everything I make because it's only going to take me so long to get my 15 grand. So instead of, like, building a business, right, like all this, he just went right for, okay, I'm going to make 15 grand and save it and sacrifice and eat peanut butter and jelly. Which is what I did even when I started working. I had a $25 a day per diem. I literally would keep the 25 and eat peanut butter and jelly or eat on the plane so I could have an extra 175 a week, 700 a month to pay my law loan. But this guy his friend says, hey, I got a job at the country club. It's good money. You can caddy. He goes, I don't know anything about golf. He goes, you don't got to know anything about golf. Just caddy. So what does he do that's different than everyone else? And this is the attitude I want you to take. He goes and does research on all the members of the high hoity-toity New York country club, and he finds the richest dude. He finds the richest guy. He asks around about the richest guy. Not only is he the richest guy, everyone says he's the best tipper, the nicest guy. And so what he does, and this is what changed my mind in the story, is he said every time he came to the club, he was right up on him. And he knew what he liked to eat. He knew he liked Diet Coke. Oh, you know, we like a Diet Coke. And guess what happened? The guy eventually said, I want that guy to caddy for me. So then when he caddied for me, he knew all about him, and he was like a perfect caddy, catering to his ego, doing all the things. And of course, big tip, saved all of it. Guess who he chose the next day when he played? Same guy. I thought he was going to tell me that he sucked up to the guy and asked for the 15 grand. That's where my mind went. That's not why he's so successful. He's so successful, he's more interested than interesting, and he was willing just to earn it and save it. Gary talks about all the time, the part I like, that I love, is about the sacrifice part. You know, I'm in sports, man. People tell all the time, how'd you get that job? Mike Dannenbaum, or my friend that invented Pictionary. You sold Pictionary, how'd you do that? And he looked at me and goes, Dave, no one was there when I was 16 hours at the bottom of the escalator at Nordstrom handing out Pictionaries. It's 17 years, man. I risked everything. Mike Tannenbaum, GM of the Jets, was in law school with me. He always says, well, I got lucky because the bargaining agreement. Mike, I graduated with 100 grand in law loans. I have Jewish parents. You graduated with 100 grand in law loans. You have Jewish parents. You work for 600 bucks a month for 2 years for the Saints. That's sacrifice. I wasn't willing to do that. I was too afraid. I was still living in shortages, voids, obstacles, scarcity. Don't project that onto everyone else. Don't feel their pressure. Here's another rule for you younger people. I wish I would have learned this. In the end, through the bankruptcy, through all the huge awards, successes, and millions of dollars and everything I had, I realized one thing about the person that I most want to please. My mother. Should be myself. But in the end, it's the same thing. Because what I learned about my mom and about every one of your moms, which probably have the most influence on your life, is they only want one thing for you. They just don't know how to do it. They just want you to be happy. They want you to be healthy and happy. And they just don't know how to do it. So what do? They tell you, oh, I see a whole bunch of rich lawyers. You're a boy from the hood playing back. You're smart. You graduated Penn. Go to law school. But they don't know dick about what it's like to have $250,000 worth of loans. And they don't know they're sentencing you to pressure in an unnecessary situation, that the world economy has changed, that we don't have to go to school anymore. Right? We can be educated in different ways. Although there are advantages. I always tell people, you want to go to school and you want to be an entrepreneur? Is that what you want to be? Then go to the school with the biggest, richest alumni. Go do your research. Get into that college. Don't worry about your goddamn grades. Go to every single alumni event. Network your ass off and get a kick-ass job from some billionaire dude that, you know, my law school, we had the CEO, my favorite story, the guy said, my mom, I wasn't studying hard. She was like, you're going to end up working for Burger King someday. So he started studying hard. He ended up being the CEO of Burger King. I go to the school, right? But that's really bad. I know how the world works. If you really want to be educated, go online. I wish I had access to Dave Meltzer and Gary Vee and Bob Proctor. And I go online all the time. I want to research something. I'm like, what is this mirror brain thing? And I'm looking online for the conscious mirror because the brain actually can mirror emotions, which may actually cause empathy. And I'm really curious on how we're connected. Well, I didn't have to go to med school. There's like all these killer videos from these unbelievable doctors that can't even afford them at Harvard. Think outside the box, man. If you're going to be like everybody else, then do what everybody else does. Doesn't mean don't go to law school, but there's 16 million ways to go there. That's a great question. Anyone else? Yeah.
All the people you interviewed on your podcast, right? What was like the biggest like life lesson that you heard from someone that like really kind of hit you the most?
I'll tell you the biggest life lesson that I've heard overall. Because all the podcasts came up with Enjoy the Consistent, Persistent Pursuit of Your Potential, every single one of the podcasts, from Maria Sharapova to Ray Lewis, you know, the Zuckerberg, like all the killer people I have on there, basically they consistently, persistently pursue their potential. And they're dealing with their ego. And they've had trauma and challenges. Here's the best piece of advice I've ever heard. And it came from a woman who graduated from my law school and is the head of HBO Films. Find something every day, exercise-wise, that you love to do, that you can do the rest. Best piece of advice I can give you, through everything I'm going to tell you, if you all can just find something exercise-wise that you love to do every day for the rest of your life, it's like being in business. You're going to be in business. All this other stuff doesn't mean shit if you lose your eyesight or have cancer, right? It doesn't mean shit. But if you exercise every day, the body works with the mind and the soul. Exercise every, just, I don't care how old you are, find something that you love to do. If you like the hot yoga, if you like the Peloton, if you like jumping jacks, if you like running stairs, find something every day to do, because in the end, that's gonna make the system work well. Everything is inferior to that. Hey, podcast listeners. Thank you for listening, as always, to today's episode. I know you've been enjoying the Road to Revenue episodes. They are downloading at record paces, and I am so grateful for you joining me, not only on the podcast, but live every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern. Make sure you email me at david@dmeltzer.com or text me at 949-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-298-